Welcome to Stories After Midnight. Today we're going to be reading a story called The Surgeon Has Escaped, I'm Sorry, by Decrolox from Reddit. I hope you enjoy this story. If you do, let me know in the comments below or wherever you can. And a huge shout out to my patrons for helping make this episode possible. Let's get started. For various reasons, I can't give you my name. I've had to alter certain details, such as names, in this to save my ass, but the public needs to know. I'm being locked up tomorrow and need to get this out now. There are monsters in the world. Beasts, creatures, aberrations, horrors, and more. I work in a facility that contains them, located deep in the Pacific Ocean. Almost every folkloric and mythological creature has a kernel of truth to its story, and that's where we come in. For example, the Draugr of Norse mythology. They're more than shape-shifting, dream-infiltrating zombies. The real beasts are what we call a level 6 threat, one of the kinds you don't survive by accident. We don't know how they appear, but they can walk through space-time like a frayed seam being pulled apart, and it allows them to fall ever so slightly out of sync with the material world. They are classified as the species Reanimatus Vigilans, the watchful reanimated. But I digress. I'm here because something escaped the facility and we can't find it. The creature, which my colleagues and I affectionately call the Surgeon, first appeared in 1888. It is the only creature to ever receive a level 8 threat classification. The Surgeon was discovered in the wake of the Jack the Ripper murders. The crime scenes turned heads in certain directions and caught the attention of my organization. We got involved and noticed certain substances in the victim. No one knew what it was, but the organization had the brains to collect a sample and keep it. A thick red goo with the texture of maple syrup and the smell of copper. Then, in 1902, a gruesome murder occurred in Russia. A poor girl, no more than 19 years old, was found mutilated in her home. When I took the job of studying the Surgeon, I read the files, and still can't get those images out of my head. At this murder, that substance was found again. The organization caught wind and began investigating more thoroughly. We came to the conclusion that the substance was a paralytic. Anyone who is exposed will lose the ability to move, but retains all feeling. After the Russia incident, any murders with this substance were kept confidential. Only the immediate investigators and the organization were allowed to know. Panic, superstition, any public trace would have compromised everything. And with more knowledge of the Surgeon's MO, we got better at finding them. From 1902 to 1984, the Surgeon claimed the lives of 96 innocent women. We finally caught him by using certain tools that could get me thrown into the depths of hell for naming. What we found shocked us all. A middle-aged man in a Victorian-era doctor's uniform, blood-covered gloves dangling at his sides, stood over a woman. Sadly, we didn't catch him in time, and we lost her. Her chest was a gaping cavity, and although her heart was beating when we got there, she showed no other signs of life. The capture attempt was a catastrophe. I've reviewed the footage and transcripts enough times to know every second by heart. One agent approached to place the restraints. The Surgeon spoke to him quietly. Not a command, not a threat, just a sentence. The agent halted, turned back toward the team, and after a moment of hesitation, raised his rifle and pulled the trigger. The Surgeon grabbed a rag, soaked in the victim's blood, and thrust it into the face of another agent. Blinded, she stumbled and fired wildly, hitting two of her own teammates before crashing to the floor. Containment was achieved only after repeated anesthesia darts, restraint nets, and overwhelming force. Even then, it felt less like a victory and more like he had allowed it. The tapes of when the Surgeon was brought in are difficult to watch. He was so polite, cooperative, almost eager to talk. I still remember them to this day, more clearly than I'd like. "So, do you have a name?" asked Dr. Otto, with a tremor in his voice that could match an earthquake, his hands shaking as he held the pen. I did. It is long forgotten to me, Doctor. The surgeon replied with a remorseful smile. Right? Well, we've been following you since the late 19th century. No name. Can you explain how you're still around? Certainly, Doctor. He leaned back in his chair as he looked around. I learned at a very young age that life is precious. So precious, in fact, that it can be guarded, taken, and traded. What do you mean by that? Well, I found that if I play the right tendons like a violin and drum the right organs, I can move life from someone to another. So you're stealing their life? Oh, Doctor, you make me sound so savage. I perform symphonies of life that only I can hear. He was looking directly in Dr. Otto's eyes as he said this. He leaned forward, eyes bright with something like joy. Right, well, tell me, why were they all women? Dr. Otto shifted slightly in his chair, averting the surgeon's gaze. They are life givers, Doctor. Pure life. He crackled as the words danced out of his mouth. The tape continued in a similar vein, with the surgeon being open. Some of the staff had an issue with it, saying he was too open. Hindsight is 20/20. They were right. 2 days ago, I was sitting with him in his cell, blackjack on the table between us and a pile of cigarettes on his side, and a much smaller pile on mine. Hit or stand? I asked, eyeing the pitiful amount of wager I had to give. John, it is an 8. Of course I hit. His laughter coated his words like honey, as I pulled a card and placed it on his side. A 10. Now's the moment of truth. My gut swirled and tensed. Hit or stand? He sat in his chair, stroking his mangy beard. His eyes focused so hard on the deck of cards by my side, I thought he was somehow reading them. Hit. The confidence in his voice sent a small shiver down my spine. I slowly drew a card and placed an 11 down. He cheered as I flipped my own card over to reveal a whopping total of 19. Good game, I begrudgingly said, as I slid my last cigarette over to him. We switched from money long ago. Ever since I had to pay for my little girl's medical bills, I just told him we used the cigarettes because of immediate gratification. Indeed, my good sir. He took a cigarette and lit it up, the smoke dancing in the manufactured light of the fluorescent bulbs. He took a long drag as I packed up the cards and then offered me a hit. You know, John, I have not left my cell in, 9 months, I think. Correct? You get 1 day a year, you know this. I waved the cigarette away as I finished putting the cards in their box. Yes, I know. Prisoner safety and such, but John, all the other prisoners are in bed by now. My legs are aching so much. I give you my word that I merely wish to walk the grounds and stretch, free of the shackles. He looked me right in the eyes as he pleaded. It appears to us that the surgeon has never lied. It's one of the more fascinating things about him. He has the ability to do so many things, but seemingly not deceive. He confessed to murders we never found, breaking our rules, even escape plans, all because he got asked. Surgeon, you know, I began. My medicine, John. He cut me off. I've never said how I make it, or even what it is. If you let me have this walk, I shall reveal it to you. A soft smile sat on his face. Ah, damn it, fine. I sighed as I unlocked his shackles. You won't tell anyone about this, right? One trip around the block, but I'm accompanying you, understand? John, language, he laughed. But yes, I understand. Don't worry, hands in front of me the whole time, walking 6 feet ahead of you. We began the journey, slowly tracing the block in tandem. He swayed as we walked, roaming from area to area with seemingly no pattern at all. We spoke intermittently about various things. All of them were meaningless chatter, but one was important. John, how is your daughter doing? I know her illness is a rare one. His voice casual as if it were something we'd spoken about many times. How do you know about her? The words tore out of me. I tasted copper and hospital lights in my mouth. It is my duty, given by the goddess, to know the well-being of all your kind. He stared at a wall while walking and talking. I can see it all, John. The beating of your fragile hearts. The rushing of your oxygenated blood. The stretching of your worn muscles. You call me the surgeon, but you are right. I'm a physician of sorts. Perhaps a mortician, an apothecary. Who truly knows? Why would you ask about her? My hand was slowly reaching towards my radio, ready to press the panic button. Do not call for help, John. There is no need. I'm not going to hurt you. He smiled as he looked around. I froze my thumb, hovering over the red button. His smile was too calm and too knowing. What? Before another word could escape, I felt my neck freezing. My joints locked in place. I managed to look down and see that red, thick liquid splattered across my chest. I do not make the medicine, John. He cooed as he stared at me. I pull it out of you. Blood is a wonderful thing. It can control your whole existence. My movements became more restricted. I felt my skin tightening until I couldn't even blink. I could feel the signals from my brain firing at full power, telling my body to move, but nothing happened. I could feel the tendons and joints eagerly awaiting orders, trying to move on their own, but nothing happened. A faint groan escaped my clenched jaw. Aw, John, he tutted. It is okay. I'm just going to stretch my legs. Do not worry. I'm a man of my word. I will not make you experience pain. He slowly paced around my frozen body. Those, Draugr, you have in Bay 4 are lovely fellows. He let out a grin unlike any other I've seen, far too wide with dead eyes. And do you want to see a secret they showed me? He chuckled as I saw him begin to blur, as if he was vibrating on the spot at the speed of sound. His laugh became distant, and in an instant, he was gone. After hours of waiting, I could move again. Then, after even more hours of debriefing, I could move freely. Hours of alarms, questioning, lockdowns, and field teams being deployed. I told them to not contain him again. Kill him. On my way out of my commander's office, he called out to me. John, wait a moment. He barked with an authoritative gravitas. There's something I don't understand. Off the record, of course. I turned around and saw him kill the power to the recording device. What's that, sir? My eyes averted his gaze as I turned around. The surgeon mentioned your daughter. We've had him marked as an ontological threat, but I can't get over that final line from him. What if he's an ego threat? Why does it have to be one or the other? I muttered as I left. I then realized that we had spent so much time categorizing these creatures, we didn't consider the possibility that they could merge and blur the lines between black and white. That suggestion brought about even more chaos. An ontology threat can rewrite time and space. An ego threat can rewrite humans. It doesn't touch reality at all. It touches us. Whatever part of you thinks it's still you. As far as I knew, ego threats were theoretical, but now I'm wondering otherwise. Before today, I wouldn't have even considered that blood magic he did to exist, but now I'm researching our archives. Babylonian and Canaanite cultures using blood rituals. Paracelsus and Agrippa considering blood for alchemy. Hemomancy throughout history. Earlier today, I was filing through files, and I got a small paper cut. I instinctively brought it to my mouth and sucked on the wound, but what I tasted wasn't blood. It tasted like curdled milk covering rotten eggs. I drew my finger away, holding back a gag, and I saw the substance trickling down my index finger. As soon as it made contact, I felt that locking sensation again. My fingers refused to obey my mind's command to bend. One of the facility doctors confirmed through many blood tests. They all show barely any hemoglobin and so much of that syrupy substance. Yet somehow my vital signs remained inexplicably normal. My blood is his medicine. Tomorrow I'm getting locked up as a new type of creature in this prison of ours. I've been given one day to get my affairs in order. The surgeon wears the shape of a man, around 184 centimeters tall, with black hair and pale skin. He has one green eye and one brown eye. His voice is soft, almost kind and patient, with a faint British sound. If you see him out there, run. I've told you what I can do. The rest I've changed, for your safety and mine. And that's the end of this story. I really hope you enjoyed it. If you did, let me know in the comments below. Give the video or episode a like. And reach out if you want to say hi. Also, check out Patreon if you want to support the channel. And you can head on over to shop.storiesaftermidnight.com for some pretty cool shirts. There's only a couple different designs, but I think they're pretty cool. Anyways, I thank you very much for listening. And we will see you in the next one.